You are listening to Bridging the Social Distance. My name is Jenny Mitchell, and I recorded this show here at CFRU, Guelph's campus and community radio station, as a means of creating a platform for us to share ideas and feelings and perspectives in the wake of this global pandemic that is COVID-19. I was afraid that people would get isolated or I would lose the opportunity to chat with my community and find out how everyone is doing, so I made this show. If you're listening and you would like to get involved or be interviewed, you can contact me at mobile@cfru.ca. I'd like to provide the disclaimer that these interviews were recorded at different points in time, so situations in some of these locations may have changed. This show is also being syndicated for CIOI in Hamilton, Ontario. Today I'm speaking with Barbara James, a resident over at the Village of Riverside Glen Retirement Residence. This interview was originally recorded on August 11th, 2020. To start with, would you like to introduce yourself for listeners?
Okay. My name is Barbara James. I was born Barbara Joan Hardy in Vancouver, BC.
Oh, Vancouver. That's nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Grew up there and schooled there and so on. Got married there. And then it was travels.
Travels.
Well, the travels, moving because of jobs and transfers that my husband, after he graduated, we ended up back east, but we went by Edmonton and then Ontario. Yeah. And then a few other places later. I won't bore you with all that. I lived in California for a while, too.
For the record, I don't tend to consider anything boring. So you're welcome to tell me about any pocket of time, and I will probably find it very interesting. Do you have memories of childhood in Vancouver?
Oh, do I? Yes, yes. I remember back in the 40s, I was born in the late 30s, so I was born in 38. But of course, music from that period and music from the 40s, all of that is familiar. And I remember our first home, which was a very tiny little cottage, that was in Vancouver. And then another home in Vancouver we moved to, which was in a totally different district. And we had a big backyard too. There was always a vegetable garden, nice. In that period of time, in the 40s. Early 40s, everybody grew vegetables.
What was Vancouver like at that point? Like, how big of a city, how densely populated?
Well, it was where we were. We were in an older district, and it was quite dense, really, right then. I mean, I saw it grow. There's no question, as I grew up, the various areas grew considerably. But where I was in the, I don't know what we called it, but it was just off Canby and not far from the general hospital. So it was in a, close area. And it was, a lot of older homes where my grandmother lived, for instance, the older homes that were built in the late 1800s or somewhere in there. Always a lot of fruit trees, apple trees in particular. And blackberry bushes. That's one thing I really remember, picking blackberries. It was just, it was always lovely when the raspberries and so on came out, but the blackberries were always quite wild. Had out of people's yards, they were in spare little blocks that didn't have a home in it. But it was, those were fond memories, and the music. Because my mother loved music as well. So I remember a lot of the pieces from way back then.
What were some favorites that jump out?
Oh, gosh, titles now. I mean, all of a sudden now I can't think of the titles of all of them. As soon as I heard some tunes, I could start singing them, I'm sure.
Did you have a style of music you were particularly fond of?
Basically, popular. I love classics as well. That's what I add on here. I listen to CBC every day. And then when they bring on the latest stuff, I don't like that when they have this period of time when it's contemporary, but it's, I don't know, it's just too much. But no, I love dance music.
Oh yeah.
And when I hear it, my feet have to start moving constantly. You ask me here, and I know them all, but I can't think of the names of them right now. If it comes on, or if I hear it on the radio, I can start singing, and particularly those of, well, late 30s, 40s, and then the 50s, of course.
Yeah.
All of that. That's just, oh boy.
When people are allowed to get together for programming at Riverside Glen or other spaces like it, one of the neatest things is a song will come on and even people who otherwise don't have that much in common will all kind of start singing along, or they all have a memory with it. It kind of brings them back to different places, but it brings them to the same place too in a way.
That's right. That's very, and I'm glad you really observed that.
Yeah,
and I've had the opportunity to see those times. There's a lady that plays the piano between the dinner hour, and it's after my dinner hour is through, and she's waiting to sit down to table in the next hour. Well, I'm telling you, she's about four pieces that she plays constantly. Now, here I am, not thinking yet. I start singing right away as soon as she's playing. And I can't keep still, and I'm singing along with her. Oh, dear.
So I've been to Vancouver a number of times, but in more recent years, of course. And so I don't know, even when I'm looking at a stretch of Vancouver, I can't always tell which houses are old and which ones are new. Okay. What kinds of jobs or what were the circumstances of folks in the 30s and 40s in Vancouver? Because I guess it would still be coming out of the Depression, and I know that mm-hmm. affected us here too. I'm curious what like the industry or work life was like, or maybe what brought your parents there.
Well, my mother was Russian born.
Okay.
But came over as a baby. My dad was born and raised in Vancouver as well.
Hmm.
So, and they lived in the same area that we first lived, Cambie District. And my grandparents had a great big home, you know, one of those big, with a big front porch and so on, the older homes. And we lived in a little, very tiny little cottage. I guess what you call a bungalow, but in my eyes, it was a cottage.
Yeah.
At any rate, one thing I remember about that too, and it's a little off the topic. I remember hearing planes going over. Now I was only about 2 years old. Yeah, about that. And I remember hearing planes going over during the wartime. And I always thought they were Japanese planes.
Hmm.
I don't know why, but they weren't. They were our planes that were going over. But that was my little sign of war.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really. And then Mother and I were walking down the street. She wanted to stop in at her cleaners, I think it was. And they also did alterations. She needed something fixed. I don't know whether it was a zipper or whatever, but at any rate, we started to go in and they came out. They said, oh, no, we're closed. We're closed. They were Japanese and they were having to move into the interior at that point because of the war. And they were just, well, when I say because of the war, yes, because Japanese people were at war and they were moving them all out into the interior.
Wow.
Yeah, at that time. And I've never forgot that. It was so sad to me. It was such a sad feeling that they would take them away from their home and just put them in, you know, out in the country, out in the, where there was nothing.
Yeah.
Other than fields and fields. So I don't know how they lived. I really don't. That's something I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But many of them survived, and I know I've met Japanese people since then, you know, like in the 50s, 60s, 70s, who as babies mm-hmm. were some of them were born out in the country.
Yeah. I didn't know that about interior BC is what you're that's mm-hmm. where they got sent.
Yeah,
that's an interesting piece of history because I'm curious how over the years that may have impacted the identity of those spaces because a lot of them have filled in and become larger, nothing close to Vancouver yeah. size, but there are definitely a lot of different communities now.
Yeah, there were still the lot came back to Vancouver.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, they knew that and they knew where the jobs were that they wanted. Now, of course, at that point, they probably didn't have the money to open up their own little businesses mm-hmm. right away. But I do recall, you know, as into the 40s, there were, I think that's when they came back later or the 50s. Mm-hmm. I can't remember when they came back. It must have been after the war was over. But it's funny how some of those little things will really stick with you.
Yeah.
I remember one story, and I had a little trike. And of course, you know, where you use your feet to move. At any rate, I took off, and I was heading toward my grandmother's home. And I knew there was a little corner store. I wanted to do this, and I went down. There was a little corner store. Had a street that I would have to cross. Hmm. And I thought, oh, maybe I'll get some help if I go into the corner store. Maybe the man will help me cross the road. Well, of course, they panicked. Here was this little 2.5-3-year-old, I guess I was 3 years old, and, you know, wanting to go on this long walk. So they panicked and they called the police and so on so that they could find out where I was, where my home was, which was only a block and a half away. And then my grandparents were the other way, another block and a half away from where this corner store was. Anyway, they sat me up on the counter and gave me a treat and a little toffee treat. So that's one thing I do remember. And of course my parents panicked, my mom was had panicked, and I'd never do that again.
I love that you remember. I have a memory from maybe a couple years, like when I was maybe 5. I was also allowed to go all the way around the block, but I was with a neighborhood kid who was maybe a year or two younger than me, who was only been on our one street. So when we turned the corner, she started crying because she didn't recognize anything. And I remember she just had a meltdown, and I was so confused because I was like, but we just turned the corner, our house is right there. And it's funny, this thing to stick with you when there's a little bit of drama. It's like taking a photo or a video of it or something. Yeah.
Now, did you get punished for getting
I'm pretty sure I just got her back around the corner and then she calmed back down. But it did put things in perspective. I didn't realize I had different rules than anyone else, you know. When you're a kid, you get something in your mind and that just seems like the only version of normal, you know.
Right. Oh, dear. Fond memories.
Yeah. I wonder if children are still, you know, out on their tricycles in Vancouver. I like to think that in certain areas there'd still be that kind of neighborhood feel.
Yeah, because they were just, you know, just friendly neighborhoods. And, you know, it's hard to say. We had an interesting situation. There was a Hindu fellow living right next door, on the property next door, which was all treed. It was like a mini forest, but there were fruit trees in there. And big kids would come and steal the fruit from the trees. At any rate, this man, he was a dear. And I went over one time. I don't know how I got the fence open. I went next door. And he was showing me how he made his tea. And it was just so interesting. And it was so kind. But then, of course, my mom you know, was concerned that I didn't think that I should be over there. It was, I shouldn't have left the yard.
Yeah.
So that's twice that I left the yard. But it was really interesting. He showed me how he made his tea. Oh, and one thing he did, he had put hot water. That was it. That's what I remember. He put the boiling water into an empty milk bottle, mm-hmm. shake it all up, and that's how he, so he'd get his, the milk, whatever residue,
oh.
in his tea. Well,
that's
that
a neat idea.
Yeah.
Most people probably lose that last bit of milk.
And, oh, that's right. Yeah. That's right. So, yeah, no, I'll never forget that. That's, I just thought that was clever. We had a lot of people from India in Vancouver at that time. Now, and I don't know historically what the reason was, you know, why so many came over. I should check that out sometime. But because there was a lot down by the river, the Fraser River, like we were just on the estuary there. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of, sawdust mills. I was going to say, I can't help but think about that sawdust. But the wood would, you know, the logs would come in that way. So a lot of them did work in that area. But I can't remember everything. But
I'm not great with geography, but there seem to be neat patterns of immigration based on the ocean. Like I know a lot of my family way back comes from like Europe because mm-hmm. they came in through the east because a lot of them landed in like Nova Scotia or Newfoundland and then moved over to Ontario from there. And I imagine in Vancouver, you'd be catching people coming the other way.
That's right. You know? Mostly Oriental, you see.
Yeah. It's really interesting. Like Canada's identity, it is diverse across it, but there's got to be patterns that emerged that go way back.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And that's, I never thought of that then.
Yeah.
Point. So, you learn. I loved history, by the way. In school. I mean, social studies, we called it then. That was one of my favorite subjects. Yeah. Very opposed to math.
I think we have that in common. I like the idea of math. I'm just
never
really thrived in it.
Oh no, when it got into that fine stuff, you know, the adding, subtracting, and multiplying, that was okay, divine. But when we got into the, you know, the rest of it, that was above me, totally.
Well, it's funny. I don't remember. I remember not doing great in history, but then later discovering a passion for history. But for me, it was definitely like what we're talking about right now. To me, is my studies in history is talking to people who lived a history. And so as soon as there was a social piece of getting to talk to people in spaces about the past, discovered like I love it so much. But when somebody in a classroom was telling me why something was important, that was harder for me to connect with.
No, I appreciate that. This is interesting. There's a book that I just started reading, and I can read it in bits and pieces, by a gentleman that lives here, and it's his history growing up in the late 20s, the 30s, living in Ontario, family farmed. So I'm going through, and right now I am just in the war years. Reading about that part. So it really is interesting when people can bring a lot of that back.
Mm-hmm.
And, I can't remember how, or I can't understand how it could have been so daring though. I don't know how you were, but, you know, you took that one chance, but traveling around when we were so young.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I remember even, you know, as a youngster, and I guess I must have been, you know, 12 in that period, and riding our bikes from Kitsilano over to West Van. Now, can you, going over the Lionsgate Bridge, and, oh, God, You know, it just thrills me that we could do that at that age.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, and I remember times, again, being old enough to go over to the corner store. And as a matter of fact, when I remember the day the war was over.
Wow.
My mom and another lady that was living with us, my dad was at work. Oh, there was so much excitement. And they sent me down to the corner store to buy some ginger ale so they could have a rye and ginger ale to toast at the end of the war.
Wow.
There's a memory.
Yeah, that's so neat.
Yeah. No, and I was, you know, couldn't have been more than six.
Yeah, you were like a real little, like, yeah, child during the war. But did you have older family members who ended up being in the war then?
My dad was in. He did go into the army, but he never did get sent over.
Okay,
at all. It was, you know, getting later and later and subsiding. So, so he never did have to go overseas, but he was stationed in BC, not right where we were. It was out of Vancouver, but at any rate. Prepared to take part, but then the war ended, and so he never did have to do that, which was fortunate.
Yeah.
In our case, very fortunate.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I remember later him taking the bus to work, going downtown to work and taking the bus. And I remember when we got our first car.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, things like that, and still living, you know, again, back to the vegetable garden, everything that we were eating grew in our backyard.
Yeah.
No, it's interesting. Where were you living when you grew up going to school?
Here in Guelph.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah, I moved here when I was two or three. I always forget to ask my parents exactly when we moved, but... We moved from Kingston, so not very far away at all, and I think it was just moved into my grandparents' house temporarily before getting our own place, which I think is why I'm kind of foggy as to exactly when, but somewhere around the age of three, I think we moved into the house I grew up in, and yeah, at one point moved around the corner, but never very far. I have a view of the Church of Our Lady out my window now, and I had a view of it then from the other side, so... Yeah.
So you lived in an older district too, so the older homes.
Yeah, when you were describing the era of the 1800s era houses in BC, that's the era of the house I'm in now.
Oh, and I just love older architecture.
Mm-hmm.
I always wanted to live in a home with older, and it seemed we always ended up living in, you know, well, of course, when I was young, in modern little homes. One was a wartime, but you know, not the era, the 1800 era that I just, oh, wow.
I think that era of house lets you live in it.
Oh.
I feel like you're at the mercy of the house in a way when it's been around that long. There's a lot of mysteries, you know, in the windows and the walls.
Oh, yeah. Just love it. How long have you been doing in the broadcasting business, sir?
Oh, since I guess it must be 6 years or so now. But having grown up in Guelph, like I work at CFRU, which is the campus and community station. So it's been around for 40 years now. I first set foot in it 20 years ago when I was 15. And so I've had a kind of community type relationship with the radio station for 20 years. I didn't even realize I was there kind of at the 20th anniversary mark, but I think of myself as having grown up with the station. So starting to work there was sort of a natural procession from having supported it and been a part of it for so long. Mm-hmm. So, I think it's around 5 or 6 years kind of formally working there, but definitely a relationship that goes back much further.
Well, Oh, well, that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. It started on the campus, did you say?
Yeah. So we're technically based out of the University of Guelph. Mm-hmm. But my specific role is sort of creating additional radio opportunities out in the community, because we know that not everybody will have the means of making it up to the station. So I'll do pop-up radio projects at retirement residences or schools or community spaces. So, it's kind of an ironic, I don't know if ironic is the right word, but when the quarantine and the pandemic happened, my job became kind of one of the main portals to the outside world, but from without leaving my home. So it's an unusual twist. Usually I would be out in the community bringing radio to them. Now I'm doing it through technology, but still getting your voices back up to the station ultimately, which is kind of nice.
Isn't that something? That's marvelous.
Yeah, I love it because it it's like you could never hear all the stories of what shapes Guelph or the spaces you share. And so,
Well, I love Guelph. I've only lived here for 20 years, and I really do like it very, very much. We were living out west for a few years with my mother in Washington State, and then the dollar went right down, and we thought we better get back home to Canada. So we did, and we brought Mom with us.
Oh wow!
We moved back, but we decided that we didn't want to go back and live in the city. So my daughter and son-in-law were here. He had just, I guess they'd been here for a year or two. He's with Cooperators Insurance. So he was transferred here. And I thought, why don't we go there? We've got two grandchildren, too, and at that point. And Mom, of course, bringing Mom, she did not like Toronto at all. She just hated it because, as she said, you're walking down the street and nobody looks at you. They're just like this. And she was so used to smiling at everybody. I mean, when you grow up in a smaller area, or in the olden days, you do acknowledge people when you walk down the street. smile or say good morning, whatever. And so at any rate, Guelph was the right move to make. I just really love it. I'm so glad we did this.
You're listening to Bridging the Social Distance, a show recorded here in Guelph at CFRU as a platform for sharing stories and perspectives during the global pandemic of COVID-19. This show is also being syndicated for CIOI in Hamilton, Ontario. Today I'm speaking with Barbara James, a resident over at the Village of Riverside Glen Retirement Residence. What part of Guelph did you move to?
Well, we ended up, it was in the New West End.
Okay.
Where we were, we just had forest behind us and then a big hill that went up. But it was a whole little, I would practically refer to it, it wasn't the wartime houses, but there were so many that were all the same. Mm-hmm. And that's something I always disliked when you live in a house and you see, oh, there's our house there. No, there's our house there. Or whoever the manufacturers were there, the builders, they just built all the same architectural style or the same house, period. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we were very happy there. It was, the basement was finished and Mother had her room and, bathroom and everything. And so it worked out. It worked out really well for us. And as it turned out, too, my husband, who was raised in Montreal, he had been adopted, actually. Oh. And he had never owned a home. He'd always rented. Always rented. And so this was all brand new to him. And he was very, very happy. And
I bet.
Think this the fact that he'd never done that. He was brought up in apartments or one room sometimes because he lived on a farm, first of all. Well, I shouldn't go into that whole story, he was just with his mother in a one room. They were sharing one room And that was during the, you know, the Depression time. So it was, he was quite a bit older than I am too. So when I say quite a bit, not that much, but maybe 6 years older. Yeah.
The age difference is really plays into people's stories of their past, though. When they lived in times like this side of the Depression or during the war, the difference of 6 to 10 years can be the difference of your loved one having been in the war in some cases and you being a child during it. Like, it's fascinating. Yeah. It is a significant difference in terms of history.
Well, that's right, because when he was telling me about living, you know, when he was living in Montreal and with his mother in this one little room, and I was thinking, because he wasn't going to school. Oh, he was in elementary school and then junior high, so I mean he's not that much older, but I was just a little kid.
Yeah,
in Vancouver then. Yeah,
you were probably riding your bike around the corner.
Yes. Naughty little brat. There's a term we don't use anymore, I don't think. I don't know whether I like it at all, but still, BRAT, that's not, it doesn't sound bad.
You're right, though. I haven't heard that in a while. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So did he move to BC for school? Is that right? Is that when he came over from Montreal, or did he move sooner
than that? Well, no, he didn't know. When he came to Ontario.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then he had finished, and he didn't end up going to university at that time at all. He has taken many courses, but he got some really good jobs, starting with the banks, and then he ended up with Bell Canada. He was public relations, and he was a writer. He did a lot of newspaper work, that type of thing, work. And he had a wonderful, wonderful voice. You would have loved to hear his voice. I just miss him so much. He just, we met, it was my second marriage.
Okay.
And I was looking to change my work. And everybody said, oh, you've got to see Mel James. He's the guru of public relations. And that's apparently what, after taking this little course, I was directed into getting involved in public relations. At any rate, I did. I went, met him, and sort of scary. I thought, oh my gosh, he was living in an apartment because he was retired doing this work, you know, out of just on his own. I thought, oh my gosh, this is ridiculous. But anyway, it changed. He asked me out on a date, and I thought, oh, well, okay. So a friend of his was an artist, so he took me to his place because his friend was showing his art. And that was the first, and then we went out for dinner, and all of a sudden, it was just magic. Went to the press club, and some music came up. The dance floor was empty, but he said, would you like to dance? And, oh, yes. Well, I'm telling you, you'd think we'd been dancing forever. Wow, was he ever good. It was just
That's really sweet.
It was just an absolutely amazing. That's a highlight of my life.
That's really special.
It really did. And my kids really loved him. So I was really, just so happy about that. And then his uncle, not his uncle, my uncle via my first marriage, he'd been very good to me. He practically adopted me when I moved to Toronto on my own. Hmm. And with my kids, mind you, but they were finishing school in North Bay at that point. And then my youngest son, Roland, was going to school then in Toronto. Anyway, Uncle Rolly, who was Roland Michener, Anyway, he had me living at his house in Rosedale while I was getting settled. He helped me look for my apartment. It was just absolutely amazing. He was the most wonderful, wonderful man. Yeah. And he loved Mel, my husband. He would ask him, we live not too far away, not in Rosedale, but we lived across. And Rosedale was over here, and we lived across the road over here in this way, in this district. And he would come over to our place for dinner, Uncle Roy did, and then he would ask Mel to walk him home because he decided that he would walk. He couldn't drive over. So Mel would walk him home. And he just adopted him. It was just absolutely marvelous.
That's awesome.
So that really, yeah. That really made that second marriage wonderful.
Yeah. Did you come over to Ontario as a single mom by that and point
I,
then?
I did. I was in Ontario, but I was up in North Bay because my ex decided he wanted to do his own business. He'd been with Ford Motor Company. And he decided he wanted to have a dealership. So that took us up to North Bay. And then everything all up. It was starting that way, but did get that way, but it was, it did it just final. Finally went right. And it was sad. It was okay. The kids were great. Mm-hmm. You know, just because they knew it wasn't comfortable too.
Yeah.
And so two of them finished high school up there. And then my youngest, Roland, he came down. Roland, he was named for his uncle. Anyway, that's where Roland finished high school. And anyway, life went on.
Yeah.
Yeah. And unfortunately, Melbourne passed away, though, just 3 years ago. So I've been very fortunate to have, you know, to be so close to Janet and the kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they are just wonderful. And Janet's husband is wonderful, too. So, yeah, it was very fortunate. Kitsilano is where I really grew up and went to school. And that's where I have my girlfriend from grade 3. We still talk on the phone.
Oh, I love that.
All the time, yeah. And it's just absolutely marvelous. Anne is her name. And we met in grade 3 and we did. And then I changed schools at one point, just briefly. And then I was back to that school. Oh, I know, it was the elementary school that I changed. But high school, we went through all that together. It's just, amazing when I think back and how long this has gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she thinks about it too. Yeah, it just, oh, golly. No, it's not good. Well, it is. It's starting to maybe bring a few tears.
Those are good tears, though. Those are the right kinds of tears.
They are. They really are. And and I think back. At any rate, but the last few years have been very, very good. Other than since Mel passed away. But all the things that we did together and taking care of Mom, a lot of that, Mm-hmm. Oh, and then when we moved to Guelph too, the other thing I did, Mom living downstairs, I babysat both my two who are adults now.
Yeah.
And have totally long-term partners. I babysat them. Well, Jan, because Jan had a job that she liked, and so she kept that, and I babysat. So it was great. Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, I remember the one time when they were getting a little older and they had their trikes with them. And they were going to they wanted to go down to the corner store. And, you know, this day, like where we used to be able to do that.
Yeah.
When we were very young, I just, you know, in this day and age, I just couldn't imagine my letting them do that. But I ended up deciding that I would let them go. And then after I saw they were, then I followed them, sneaking behind. And at one point when they were practically there, they noticed me. Oh dear. I just couldn't hide my, because the street was long and narrow, yeah. So I couldn't be zigzagging around corners to the same extent. You couldn't go up on people's lawn and hide behind the porch or at any rate they noticed me, but at least I, you know, watched them go down. And there was a, you know, a very, it was a fairly, could have had a lot of traffic on it, you know, mm-hmm. at certain hours. But at this stage of the day, it was fairly quiet. So, but anyway, they did it. They grew up.
Yeah. I think it's so neat. If you hadn't moved over here, then you wouldn't have gotten to be nearly as prominent a role, right?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
that's exactly
awesome.
Right. Yeah. I have my cousin who's in radio and TV, Helen Hutchinson. She was with CTV, CBC, and then was she was with CBC for ages and ages, and then with CTV briefly, I guess. But she hasn't been well, and I've lost her telephone number. I've got to try and get in touch. But she was in for years, did well. And I often thought that, as you're doing, I often thought that that's what I would like to do. It was suggested to me at one point when I was living up in North Bay, and but never did it.
Yeah, I think meeting people from within Riverside Glen, I think there's the fact that it ends up on the radio is sort of the that's the outcome. But I think you can do a lot of the things that make it special just by existing in those spaces and meeting the people around you. It's all kind of like interviewing, really.
Oh, it is. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I've been in isolation so much in so long. When I came. And then, so I was 2 weeks then. And then this next, the one that we just had.
Move in during the pandemic?
Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's hard. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
And I came from St. Joe's, and I had been quarantined over there, too, because I had an appointment at the hospital. So when I came back, quarantined, and then quarantined when I first went in, of course. So I know what it's like.
Yeah.
I must admit, it's a little easier here than it was at St. Joe's, because you're just in your one little, you know, like a hospital room.
Oh, man. Yeah.
So I spent the last eight months. Well, I was in the hospital, went to St. Joe's. I came home last December. And so I had Christmas. I had Christmas at home, and then in January I was back in the hospital again. So in January until I came over here.
Wow.
So it's just been a pretty long stretch.
Yeah.
And, so it's taken me a little while. I've met quite a few people, not that I see them other than at the dining room, in the hallway, but at least, you know, we do see each other. Mm-hmm. And so I'm getting to know more people. And that way, you'll meet somebody that you want to visit with maybe more often. But thus far, we haven't, because we've been in quarantine, I haven't met anybody that I've met yet that But I know that will happen because there's, and I decided to take an exercise class. So that's, and then the one fellow, he's put out the fellow, he's new, a very nice young man. And so he gave me a program about everything for the whole week. Say, you know, you might like this and you might like that. So, I mean, you know, could try them.
Yeah.
Tai Chi. But it's the movement that's the exercise, of mm-hmm. course. But I just couldn't imagine that. But anyway, I thought, oh, I'll give that a whirl.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Well, I've been coming to Riverside Glen for so many years that I've had the benefit of meeting people sometimes when they first move in and hearing about their skepticism about certain programs or that things they're not sure about, and then come back even sometimes just a few months later and they've fallen in love with that programming and they do it all the time, and there it's just really neat. Yeah, yeah. Different things are a different fit, but
Well, I did my first one yesterday. I went to, it was balance. And I mean, and I can see where it's very important.
Yeah.
But I think I'd be inclined to get just a teeny bit bored, but it's only about half an hour. So, I mean, that's, and it's all good for you. Mm-hmm. If, particularly if you follow it up and practice some of them on your own and not wait for. But I've got all my exercise cords. I just looked over there, and they're in a bag, like all these.
Oh yeah.
I haven't used yet. But my daughter made sure she packed them, sent them over.
It's technically a fantastic time to work on that type of stuff when you are in your room most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Doesn't mean you want to, though.
No. But you're right. A very good point. I've got caught up in doing these word puzzles. That's something that I was doing crosswords all the time, but now it's these ones where you have to find words, you know, you see a jumble of letters and find words. And I just become addicted to this. It's so silly. I don't know. And the ones that they send over, I've been doing those really fast.
Yeah.
I'm getting so used to this, looking, you know, for the certain letters. You end up with a plan. A plan, man, as the kids used to say.
Yeah.
I'm sure you did. That's the plan, man.
Sounds fine.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Oh, dear.
I have a couple questions I've asked pretty much everybody that I'd love to ask you, if you're up for it. One is around support. So when we're going through a global pandemic, and that's obviously going to be a challenging time, and different people are supported in different spaces. I'm curious if there's a way that you either have felt supported that you'd love to share, or if you have an idea of what support could look like during this time that we should be trying to do or trying to implement to look after maybe ourselves or other people.
Yeah, I guess, you know, that's a hard one for me because I feel even just over the telephone that I'm being supported. Whether it be friends or family that are calling, so you're having conversations. But right now, of course, because I haven't made a real contact with people in here, like a woman, for instance, that you just can't even snap my finger.
Yeah.
But anyway, that you just hit it off and you yak a lot. Like I do with my, you know, friend Anne and a couple of other people that I talk to frequently. So I haven't found that yet. But I have in the dining room, this is basically the only place that you do meet unless you're involved or you get involved in. So I am talking to the same people all the time, but I guess it's been too short a time for me to let you know that, because I haven't, other than Lloyd down the hall. And, you know, he talks all the time. And then I've got, as a matter of fact, we've got about three people here that moved from the apartment, that the condominium that I live in.
Oh, okay.
Across the way. So right down the hall, there's about two people that lived there, but they're gentlemen. So, you know, you don't, but they're, you know, very nice and so on. And I think there's another one that lives over on the other side, but it's basically mealtime that you end up talking to people. And I think probably what, you know, all things be going well, that I would like to volunteer once I, you know, get going.
Yeah.
When my nights gets better. And yeah, I think I'd like to do that. I don't know what all they have in the in that area, but
I think there's some opportunities there.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. So I'll just have to find out.
Yeah.
A little more. Ask some questions and see where. I don't know whether I would. Well, I do. When I go into the dining room, I've met a couple of ladies that, you know, like to see me and so on. And no, I like to see them. It's very nice. So we have a few words. And that kind of thing, that visiting to people who don't see that many people.
Yeah.
There are some that don't. If they don't have any family, maybe that are close. And they just need a little cheering up.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So anyway, I'll see as soon as I'm ready. I'll ask.
Right now, I mean, those of you with family in Guelph or those who don't have that, I think there's challenges to both when you can't be visiting, right? So
that's right.
It does seem like an opportunity to connect with each other in a way that is needed more now than maybe it normally is clear, it's got to be challenging. Yeah. I'm hoping that there'll be some sort of club that will form from all the residents that moved during this time, because you'll have your own unique kind of desire for friendship, and you'll all be new, and so maybe there's something that could happen.
COVID club.
Yeah. I'll toss it to Bryce. I bet he could get some traction there. Well, the other question I've been asking people is one around silver linings. So recognizing that there still somehow have been bright spots and opportunities for things to emerge out of this global pandemic that are nice things to have happened or that maybe wouldn't have happened otherwise. And I'm curious if there's something you've seen either in the space or out in the broader world that has occurred during this time that you would love to see continued, even if we do get to go back to our more normal version of gathering.
Yeah, no, it's funny. That's something that I just hadn't thought, other than, as I say, meeting people here who are lonely. You know, that type of thing. Growing, I think growing relationships, if you will, or friendship. I don't know whether I would call them relationships or friendships, you know, for people who are or don't have family. That kind of thing. Basically, that's the most I can think of right now. And encouraging them maybe to be a little more active if it's possible, because there are many that aren't able to be too active, but then you can be in other ways.
Yeah, for sure.
So you could suggest that. Now, mind you, here, they're very good about offering games and so on, so that brings people out. But there are some people who just are locked in their room.
Yeah.
And they just don't seem to want to move out. And some of those, maybe you can pull them out a bit, but others, maybe that's what they prefer. You know, you just... So I guess that would be... That's the only thing I can really think of right now.
Yeah.
That would be to bring people out. Or, and now that many of them are able to see family, but a lot of them not very often because their family lives out of town.
Yeah.
And that's what really surprises me, when they're here and yet their family lives far away.
Yeah.
Whatever the reason might be, I have no idea. Yeah. Anyway, that's what I would like to do.
Yeah. I like the idea of that silver lining, the idea that maybe new dynamics or relationships can emerge in the absence of, yes, of some of the other ones. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
For me, when the pandemic started, my first thought was I won't be able to do any of my radio work because all of that involves gathering together in spaces. And in radio, when you're using microphones and you're close and you're talking, it's all of the worst parts of the biggest risks. And especially when I'm working a lot with seniors who are in an age demographic, mm-hmm, particularly vulnerable and all the things. And so my next thought was like, well, I still want to be connecting and meeting people and talking to people, especially if we're isolated. So it felt like the reason I do what I do was arguably more important, even if the structure had to be completely flipped on its head. And so I feel like it's been absolutely, that's my silver lining, is this has been a wonderful stretch of time for me because it's just been full of connection.
Oh, which, yes, yeah. I can see that. Well, they see that's where I come from, too.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like a strange opportunity to sort of be teleported into people's rooms to make friends with them while in isolation, but I love it.
Oh, yeah, no, I can appreciate that. Yeah. That's just great. The first time I had an experience with this was over when I was at St. Joe's. My son asked if we could get hooked up, and I haven't got my little iPad. At any rate, one of the, I've forgotten what her position was, but over at St. Joe's, anyway, she brought her equipment into my room, and I had a face-to-face talk with my son, who lives up in Meaford.
Oh, yeah.
He and his wife. So I had chat with them, and it was just really interesting. So you're the only other person I've ever had a...
You could probably connect with your friend out west. You're from friend from grade
and
three.
We could do, go, we could. Yeah, mm-hmm. Because she's got all the equipment. So yeah. All I need is to have mine here.
Yeah.
My daughter thought, she said, you weren't even using it. So
I have an iPad that the main thing it ends up getting used for is when I'm baking, I bring up recipes on it. And so I'm sure I would be accused of not using it too much, but I think I use it all the time, but it's often covered in flour. So it's probably not the best device for that, but yeah.
Oh, that's lovely. Oh dear. Oh, this has been so great.
Yeah, it's been fun. Yes, well,
good.
I guess I need to wrap up, but it was so nice to meet you.
Oh, Jenny, I'm just so pleased to have met you, and I look forward to meeting you in person.
Mm-hmm.
And or talking to you again.
Yeah, it sounds good.
Okay.
Bye.
All right, dear. Take care. Bye-bye.
So once again, that was Barbara James, a resident over at the Village of Riverside Glen Retirement Residence. That brings us to the end of this episode of Bridging the Social Distance, a show produced at CFRU in Guelph and syndicated for CIOI in Hamilton, Ontario, that aims to create a platform for us sharing what we are doing to get through this time together in the wake of COVID-19.